Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
We were having the chat there before, the chat, Tommy. How are you doing? Tommy Bow is in the studio, player, pundit, presenter, podcaster, and now perfumier.
Perfumier.
Neither of us could say
that. Good morning.
We've wanted to have this chat for the longest time, but obviously you're busy at the same time in the previous job I had.
Absolutely, yes. Early morning television, I am, and of course you are early morning. Thank you now for moving to this slot. So all your listeners now watch us in the morning, which is great. But congratulations on the new role to 2 hours.
Oh, yes.
You're busy.
Yeah, no, busy. Yeah, yeah. We have to really stretch this out now. Okay, so you're ready for 1 hour conversation?
I'm ready for it.
We've way
lots
more
to
than
talk
that.
About.
No, thanks a million. And so you were on this morning?
I was. Yeah, yeah. We discussed on Ireland AM this morning. We had a busy show. Everything from the Pascal fallout to money worries leading up to Christmas.
You cover it all on that programme.
I'm a celebrity to how to cook the perfect moule marinière. So, yeah. we do cover a lot.
He's cooking moules now. That's what Tommy Bow's up to these days. How many years are you doing Ireland AM?
This is my sixth year.
Is it?
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, it's flown. And listen,
it feels like you've been doing it longer, weirdly.
Do you think so? Yeah. Like, listen, I'm only retired from rugby 8 years.
And
to go to move from a sport and a profession like rugby, which is always the dream, to grow up as a young fella, to go out there and represent your country, and to have done that is something I'm so, so proud of. But to move into a new field, and obviously I was working in sport for a little bit, but to be an Ireland AM, to cover such a broad range of topics, to kind of have such such amazing guests on every day. It's amazing.
I love it. Keep your energy and your happy disposition the whole time.
Well, it challenges it. Certainly the early alarm clock definitely pushes it. Yeah.
How early is it?
Well, I'm normally 5:05 in the morning.
5:05?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's an early start, particularly with two young kids. It's not good whenever my 8-year-old daughter is putting me to bed in the evening. So she's reading me a story. So we say it's homework. You read your book, Emma, and I'll fall asleep.
That must come from the kind of the drudgery of rugby and just being disciplined and getting up at all hours.
Well, it's the big... That's exactly it. And no, it's not drudgery, but I think one thing that sport does teach you is the power of habits and discipline.
Right.
And it's been so beneficial that from moving from sport into live television in particular, because you have to... with an early start, I'll have my breakfast, my overnight oats in the fridge the night before. I have my clothes laid
barely
out.
In the fridge.
Well, they do. Yeah,
unless you put them in the afternoon.
Well, this is it. You put them in the night before and you try and get... And if I can be in bed by 9 o'clock and sleep through to 4, that's technically 7 hours. Now, whether that always happens or not is rare enough. But the discipline of sport has kind of coached me well for early morning television. And you get the same kicks, not quite the same as running out in the Aviva against South Africa this weekend. But whenever you've got a politician opposite you, or when you're talking to somebody about Pascal Donoghue stepping away and a new reshuffle within Finnegan, you know, stuff like that is so far outside my comfort zone. So it really pushes
it. It doesn't look like it.
No, it
because
is.
You've had the famous interview. I played a clip earlier on of the Leo Varadkar. Then you took on Norma Foley another time, and they kind of look so shocked.
Well, they don't expect to be coming in and being, I wouldn't say grilled. Your show is all about the viewers and listeners as well. We get so many messages from people who are going through difficult times, and it's. If we do get a politician in, I suppose it's my job to try and put those worries and concerns through to them. Now, we're not getting as many politicians now, maybe because of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
And we love, because I get a real kick out of them coming in. I get like it.
But your research, obviously, you must follow the news pretty closely in politics.
Callan's kicks, that keeps me up to scratch on all of it.
Oh, God, don't rely on that.
No, you do. Of course you do. And again, sport is a big thing. Research, preparation. If you haven't done your prep, it'll come back to bite you.
It's kind of instead of the military history or habits in Ireland, we have sport, don't we? Whether it's GAA or rugby.
Yeah, and we're doing bloody well at it, aren't we? I mean, for such a small country, you see the scenes on the football pitch at the weekend, the rugby pitch as well, Rory McIlroy as well, the women's basketball as well. Like, it's just phenomenal.
The under-17s.
under-17s.
It's been kind of incredible, hasn't it? We'll come back to the rugby because I have a kind of a weird wondering why we treat the Irish team like they're in the flop era. I'll come back to it in a second. I want to start because you're from, where people say, I don't sound like you. I go, we're completely different worlds. South Monaghan, Inniskeen is like, I think an hour, wouldn't it, to get to Emmy Vale?
It is, yeah.
You're up at the very, very top of
Echelon. North Monaghan, yeah. Emmy Vale, exactly right on the border. You're in the Louth border. I'm on the
Tyrone, we'd get a nosebleed beyond Castle Blaney.
Absolutely. I know. Well, I know the road very well. I'm in Blaney all the time. But yeah, I remember playing. Well, your famous Patrick Kavanagh is in Inniskeen, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He went straight south to Dublin. I don't know if he was ever even up north of the county.
Tough man to follow after that as well. And the Meegan brothers. The Meegans were always the footballers who I used to hate playing against back in the day with Emmy Vale.
Yeah, well, you had Scotstown not a million miles away and Clontibret, which of course had Conor McManus. You brushed shoulders with him, I think, as a player. He would have been younger.
Conor would have played against me underage. He was a bit younger than me, but listen, Clontibret are a hotbed. They've got some fantastic footballers there. Conor McManus. So to be fair to Conor, he is a player, I'd say one of the only players that would get into any team at any generation. I think he was a once in a generation player to come from Monaghan, and to obviously win Ulster titles was fantastic, but to miss out on an All-Ireland final or even to get a trophy would have been amazing for him. But he's a legend of a bloke. I see him all the time now.
You were with Emmy Vale GA club.
Yeah,
were you midfield?
Midfield or centre half forward, yeah. I'm good at running from the rugby, but I'm a desperate shot. Oh, cockeyed. So if Conor and McManus was playing with me, I'd do all the running because he doesn't like to
run
too much.
In a running club too, were you?
I was, yeah, in Glaslaw Harriers. They celebrated 80 years just a couple of weeks ago. And when I was playing rugby through an insurance company, they wanted to kind of reward somebody who made a big impact on my life growing up, and there was a running coach who's still part of the club in Glaslaw, a guy called Noel Kennedy, and I credit him for everything really from my running career and rugby career and right through. He was an amazing guy, a fella who could somehow encouraged the slowest runner on the day to come back the following week, and that that's the best I've seen you run, or else with me he could put me up against older people to really challenge you. Just an amazing person, and I think a credit to volunteers out there and wonderful coaches that do stuff all over the country.
There's always someone, isn't there?
There is, at
an early stage.
We all have people who make a big impact.
Emmy Vale GA Club are doing quite well, and they're playing the junior championship level. Yeah, they're in an Ulster final.
Yeah, they're going well. Yeah, I was at that dinner in Glaslaw, and they were all saying, "Are you going to the match tomorrow? Now you'll be there at the match."
You don't go everywhere.
I've been struggling to get up to that one, but I love getting home. I'm rugby obviously through and through, but I grew up from Monaghan. Gaelic football is in the veins up there, and I love getting home, catching up with people, and keeping an eye on everything that's going on.
I didn't know that neither of your parents grew up in Monaghan.
No.
Both
I'm a complete blow-in. Yeah. Well, I'm not.
You're authentic.
They are.
Yeah, they are. And they both came separately, didn't
you? Yeah, my dad is from Waterford. He then went on to study in UCD and got a job in Silver Hill Duckling up in Emmy Vale, which is the Wagyu duck, the Wagyu beef of duck. It's where you kind of find, it's premium stuff. So he went up there and got a job up there. My mum is from Kildare. She was working as a physio, and the only job she could get was up in the north, but didn't want to travel to the north. So lived in Emmy Vale, which was not too far away.
And so she went every day from Emmy Vale to where?
Yeah, over the border up to, I think she started off in Craigavon Hospital. So it's amazing that back in those days, and even when I remember it, you know, the huge big barracks, having to drive through every morning.
Knocknacloy.
And the army there and the machine guns. And, you know, as a young fella, I think if people were looking at it now, they'd be shocked about what
it's
was
incredible
there
what becomes normal.
Yeah, where back then, growing up, you know, having these army soldiers look in the car and quiz you where you're going, who you are, with their big machine guns.
That was the bit where you got most excited about.
I thought
a gun.
Cool. Yeah, I was wondering, could I get out and hold it?
Exactly. Huh? Actually, when you look back, they were only teenagers. Some of them.
I mean, it's insane. Like, it is insane to think how far we've come, and even in Emmy Vale, it was just part of the fabric back then. And, you know, even people, when I talk to them in Dublin or further down south, who just wouldn't have ever seen anything like that, or just they're shocked to hear about what it was like, and even that whole cross border thing, and actually how close we are, but
you
how
had
different
a total
we
cross
are.
border upbringing, didn't you, since your mum was working in the north? And you went to school there. Was it secondary school?
Yeah, I went to secondary. We're right beside the border there. I went to secondary school in Armagh. One of our neighbours, a good family friend, was a teacher up in the school in Armagh. And
is that the connection? Yeah. So you got the lift?
Yeah, and he was amazing. David Eakin, he was called, and he was a teacher. He was a rugby coach up there as well. My parents just felt it would be good to break away in something different. And listen, I owe a huge amount to that. Like, it was an amazing school, actually.
This is where you discover rugby.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I played rugby in Monaghan Rugby Club, but at that stage, I was a jack of all trades. I played soccer, Gaelic, tennis, golf, horse riding, anything to get me away from studying. But it was when I went to secondary school and rugby was the main sport there. That's kind of where the love grew. But I was never the best player. I was like, I look back in that time, people kind of, Donegal Callan, who I do this podcast, The Offload, yeah, with, and Donegal's, you were always getting picked. Like, I wasn't the best player on the pitch. I never got picked for the Ulster Academy. I never played this whole Irish schools. I kind of fell into...
You were very late.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, late.
It was the Royal School in Armagh.
The Royal School.
You would have played with them. Were you first choice there?
Not really. I played for the firsts, the seconds, the thirds, and the fourths in my final year in school. So I was I think I was a late developer, and I was probably somebody who made a lot. My whole thing back then is I was a bit of a scatterbrain, probably still am, and it's kind of come from the skincare, and I'll go with this, the name Flow, because...
Are you plugging in? I'm trying to talk about your childhood here.
But in it does go around the same circle, because as a young fella I was completely
wanted
lost.
Multiple things to
I
go
was
on
all over the
time.
Place okay. And one thing that sport taught me was discipline and focus and the power of routine. And I think that that is...
You can do the multiple things that you're doing, presenting, podcast,
you
rugby punditry.
And discipline and having this routine. Exactly. And that is a state of flow, is a kind of a rugby term. But if things become routine like that, they almost happen without thinking. And that's when you're at your best.
Come here, were you kind of, you must have been the odd one out. How did they view you in that school? Because obviously a staunch
Catholic.
Protestant.
Yeah, I was
school.
A Catholic. And there weren't many of us in there. There's another young, another fella, Connor, who'd come over from Ballybay. He was in the school as well.
You huddled in the corners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. but Joe, you know, it was an amazing upbringing, and two very different cultures, you know, from the south and from the north. And, you know, there's all this talk about United Ireland, but I think that there are huge differences. And I think that only happens with conversations and people coming together and understanding the differences, because some of my best mates are all Protestant from that school, and we get on like a house on fire. And I do think one thing that brings so many people together is sport, though.
Because you went on to play in college as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Where was college, by the way? Ulster University?
I went to Ulster University, but I played for Queens,
Oh, is that how that...
Yeah,
oh, right.
Yeah, I know.
Ulster
University didn't have much of a rugby team at that time, and I fancied a bit of student rugby. Again, I wasn't taking it too serious at that stage, and I was looking forward to going out on the lash.
When do you finally take it seriously?
Well, it was around that sort of period. I went off on a holiday and I had bleach blonde hair with a blue stripe down the middle, and I got called into a trial, and... sometimes, I suppose, when you stand out for the wrong reasons, actually, I played really well and managed to get another trial, and things took off from there. Great.
Was that kind of the end of the party then?
Yeah, it was. Mm. Yeah, I got to enjoy student life to an extent, but there comes a time when you kind of have to knuckle down a little bit. And yeah, I think it was in the early stages of that professionalism. I got to enjoy the fun side of it, but at the same time, I got to see actually what real professionalism and actually... a bit of concentration.
What did you study in Ulster University?
I did construction engineering and management.
I was wondering, was there something I would point towards your current career? But no, construction.
Construction, yes. I'm an engineer, construction engineer, yeah. Having never been on site once, but I got the piece of paper.
Could you do it if you went on?
Well, I always felt when I finished rugby, I'd go into construction, I'd build the first leaning tower of Monaghan. And I didn't know, it wasn't meant to be leaning. But
we've only got land in Monaghan.
Exactly.
It wouldn't sink anywhere.
It would sink there. Perfect foundations.
When did you start the brand you're wearing, 15 Kings?
15 Kings started 11 years ago. Yeah.
Right.
We started off with the shoes, Lloyd and Price, 16 years back, 2009, when we won the Grand Slam with Ireland. And then it was for me with the shoes, I was involved with a couple of friends in Monaghan, and we decided I could have a bit more of a an impact with the clothing. And it's been amazing. Like, we've probably had our best year ever this year between all the different brands. And just as just the I suppose, the amazing response I get to people all over the country. And that's the amazing thing. Like, I spend a lot of time here in Dublin, but it's actually getting out. I'm going to be travelling to Mayo. I'm going to be travelling up to Donegal this weekend. I'm going to be travelling all over the country.
You're going to do that?
Yeah, no, I'm going out. That's the big part. Like, that's a bit, trying to squeeze it in is hard, but that's where I get a real buzz from, is going out and seeing the shops and finding out what's working, what's not working. And listen, to have a brand for over 10 years doesn't happen by just...
Right, yeah, you can't sit back. I thought you'd have someone just running the whole thing now and you just could sit back.
Like, it's easy to say that, but people... Listen, the shops and the people who are buying it are cute to that as well. And if they don't feel that there's some sort of connection to it, then it doesn't work. And for me...
Has it happened to bigger brands?
Well, we're coming up against the Tommy Hilfigers, the Gants. Right, you're coming up against huge worldwide brands. So for me...
You couldn't call it Tommy. Oh, yeah, I see.
Exactly. They did run them out. But if I go in and see the shop owners and I show them exactly how invested I am in it, they will trust me and they will push the customers towards the brand as opposed to other bigger ones.
Do you get sales now from the rugby figures in Dublin, or is it all Culchies?
Culchies. That's my market right there. I will take anyone, to be fair.
We don't
discriminate. But no, listen.
What sells well among the country lads? What are they buying? Quarter zips still? Well,
tell you, the quarter zips are good. The old brown shoes can never go wrong. Brown shoes. Listen, I get
you're the one to blame.
Tip to toe. Like, listen, I get
literally
you covered
tip.
Up. And the smell on top of that as well. We have you covered for Christmas.
Is this new now, this perfumier that you're doing?
Well, the Flow skincare, we have aftershave.
Flow by Bow.
Flow by Bow.
I saw you plugging that all last year.
That's it. And with the moisturisers, with shower gels. And again, it's just going back to that maybe lack of purpose. I was down at the Ploughing Championships for the couple of days.
That'd be a market
the
now.
Young fellas buying it was unbelievable.
Young fellas buying moisturiser. And we're supposed to, I thought
but
there was
things
a
have changed. This is it. You would never even think of taking moisturiser into the rugby change. Like, the slagging you would have had.
Really?
It's unreal. But the one thing is with this is that you encourage, like, it's actually more, I've looked into it now. Young fellas, there's, with teenagers and young adults, there's a problem out there, particularly for boys. There is a loss of direction. There is a loss of purpose. And I think for me, a big part of this is rugby instilled habits and routine and discipline into me. If you get up in the morning, you go for a shower, you look after yourself, you put on some decent clothes.
To make the bed, look after your...
It starts the day on the right foot.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important for people. Listen, if you buy me clothes or whatever else, I don't mind. But I think we have to make a big conscious effort to go look after yourself. And if you start the day on the right foot, you're off to a winner.
So Tommy Bow, construction engineer, do you know how perfume is made now?
I do, actually.
Were you involved?
I was involved in all the scents. I actually went, when I was a young fella again, I went to a French exchange about 5 years in a row to a family in France who were major perfumiers. I don't know, what is the term?
Perfume makers.
And so
you didn't learn much French in the 5 years.
I did not. Well, it was in French, and my French wasn't great. But I go over and there and see them. They take me into the factory and they show me and the smell. Like, it's fascinating stuff. The level of detail it goes into. So I did get it, and that's again with the shoes and the clothes. Then I was the one again pushing. Can we not go down this angle as well? Because I think there's a huge opportunity here.
What do you call it then? Do you saying cologne or aftershave or what?
Eau de toilette.
Oh, the toilette.
Well,
I forgot that
it's
one.
It's EDT. But actually, I could go into the science. But so you have EDP, which is Eau de Parfum.
Oh, yeah, I never know this.
And EDT.
Yeah. I tried to learn it going through airports the odd time.
Well, EDP
Parfum is the strong one.
Has a higher percentage, actually. But we kind of felt for fellas, they don't want to think that they're wearing Eau de Parfum. So we called EDT, even though it has a higher percentage of smells.
Oh, it kind of sounds more manly if you go EDT.
Well, I kind of thought, though, yeah. For those country lads down at the Ploughing Championships, they want to...
Have you any Eau de Toilette?
Take the blue one there.
Tommy Bow's Eau de Toilette.
Perfect. So yeah, it's great.
That's what you're doing. And what does it smell like? What's can you describe it to us now?
Well,
on the radio?
We have a couple of different smells. You kind of take an inspiration from different ones out there. So you kind of have inspired by kind of your Chanel Blues. You have your Hugo Boss Man. You have Ralph Lauren Red. You have your Sauvage. So yeah, it's trying to find that balance of what works. But they all seem to sell, and so does ours. It's great.
It smells nice.
It's perfect. I'll give you a spritz after
oh
the show.
Oh, God, I can't wait.
Although I've been told you have a very sensitive nose.
No,
so
I don't.
Have to be
it's Arthur Grunlian coming here.
Jeez, Arthur, you'd smell him
like
before he comes through the door.
Yeah, for days. I have a coat I can't wear anymore. I was taken in off the line, actually. It's been a month. Should be okay.
Did he have you up dancing as well, no?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Of course.
He's an audible rainbow.
He is.
I started talking about rugby because the sport's going so well. We lost the All Blacks, but Japan, no bother, Australia at home, South Africa coming up next. Like, they're going very well, but there's a feeling of sort of meh about the whole thing. What's going on?
Listen, I think there's no doubt that there's going to be changes coming. We get to the stage, there's a lot of players that have been part of this Irish system who have been unbelievable servants to the team, but who are getting to that stage. When the Lions is over, now everything focuses on the Rugby World Cup in 2 years' time.
And that was such a kind of a whitewash, wasn't it, the Lions? There was no real excitement.
It was a little bit of a shame, given that there were so many Irish players involved
in it.
It just didn't really catch on. So, and it's the same, even with our podcast, you know, we noticed that once the Six Nations finished and the clubs finished, actually the Lions, there's not just that huge appetite for some reason with it here over the summer. So everything is very much focused on the Rugby World Cup in 2 years' time. And there's just question marks. And do we need to refresh the squad a little bit? Because we haven't had great history in the Rugby World Cup in years come by.
It doesn't feel like we got the buzz back since then. It was such a disappointment.
It was. The high, and it goes back to this whole Johnny Sexton saying we maybe didn't achieve our goal in terms of getting to the past the quarterfinal, but we did achieve the goal in trying to bring the Irish public along with us. And we did. I mean, listen, you talk about what happened with Troy Parrott at the weekend. And it was phenomenal. And that's what sport can do. And when Ireland beat South Africa in that Rugby World Cup, it was similar. Like, I was in the stadium when Zombie was ringing out.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. Like, and that's what I just love, the power of sport. So, yes, Irish rugby is not going, it's just in a bit of
not reaching their potential, is that the problem?
Well,
like, we'd beat South Africa that time.
They
went
South
on
Africa
to win
this
it.
Weekend and all of a sudden we're back number one in the world. I don't think we should get too worried about it, but I do think we have an unbelievably strong team. There will probably be changes going forward into the Six Nations, but I think it's a team we can still be so proud of, and I think this weekend could be a big opportunity to get themselves back on the horse again.
You're talking up those changes. Are you think it's too Munster oriented when Andy Farrell was on his break?
They're too Munster oriented. No, listen, it's definitely not Munster or Ulster.
Sorry, the Munster lads.
Oriented.
Yeah, the Munster lads were kind of but it was
very
Leinster.
Very much. Yeah. Listen, the bones of the squad is Leinster. There's absolutely no reason why it shouldn't be. They are one of the most dominant teams in world rugby. Like, I would love to see more Ulster men on the team. I wouldn't love to see more Munster.
Do they have the talent in Ulster?
They don't at the moment. And, like, we've had probably four players involved in this Autumn Nations series, but there's a lot of young guys coming through who I think could get themselves into the team. So I think come next Six Nations, there's another opportunity. I think Andy Farrell will start to mix it up a little bit by giving other guys an opportunity.
So what call it then against South Africa?
I think Ireland are going to give them Ireland played really well at the weekend against Australia. They're not vintage performances at the minute, and you mentioned the disappointment against the All Blacks, but I think there's always one good thing about Ireland. They can rise themselves up to the occasion in a big game against South Africa. I don't think Razzy Erasmus, the South African coach, has beaten Ireland in Dublin. It's the only team that he hasn't beaten away from home, and I think we're going to continue that this weekend.
It would be good to get the buzz back again, wouldn't it? Because the focus should probably head in that direction now that the World Cup qualifiers, that's not happening until next March, and people are hungry for more, aren't they?
They're hungry for more. We always want more. Yeah. And look, isn't that just amazing that the sport that we can give people such enjoyment that we are competing at the very top?
Yourself and Donico, does that podcast roll on now through once the internationals are done?
Myself and Donico, it's just a great opportunity when you retire from sport. We all go different directions. A lot of the guys I played with are gone to teaching or business development or selling medical devices or God knows what. And this is just an hour every week, myself and Dunica, two great mates, an Ulsterman and a Munsterman, catching up, having the crack. And I love it. The podcast is absolutely flying. We're going on tour, actually coming next March as well. We're going to be in Dublin, Belfast, Limerick and Cork. And perfect Christmas present again if anybody's looking for something.
Too many things.
But I think it's It's just, it's a great crack, and I enjoy catching up with him. He's an absolute hoot. Of course,
he describes the two of you as two rugby husbands.
Well, we are. We're like the driftwood of the rugby team. I actually was chatting to one of the rugby players the other day, and he said, "Oh, geez, you two jokers again." As if we need a winger and a second row who knew nothing about the game are there educating the Irish public on how bad we are. It's probably not a great representation.
Oh,
but people want to, there's so many sports podcasts out there where they talk about the nitty gritty of the game. We want to give people the stories that happen behind the scenes. What happened in the change room after Troy Parrott scored that wonderful hat trick? What happened on the bus home? Who made a fool of themselves? There are the stories that we want to give.
Because are you texting lads to find those things out? And
oh, big time. And Dunica has never drank. He's never touched a drop of alcohol.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I was the one who was normally the butt of the joke in a lot of these things. But he has this amazing memory. As if to recount all the times that I messed up or somebody else messed up. So yeah, he's always the man with the stories.
He's John Sheehan in the Dubliners.
Oh, he remembers everything. He wrecks my head. Yeah, some of the stuff he brings up's cringe.
Oh my God. Tommy's a tonic, so grounded and down to earth. Always a pleasure to listen to, says Bernie.
Oh, thank you, Bernie. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Do you switch off? What do you do when you're not working? Is there ever a moment when you're not?
The kids. Yeah, do you know what, honest Oliver, I probably have too much going on at the minute. life is busy, and I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Oh yeah, Christmas is going to be great in your
life. Very tolerant wife, but my time to switch off is taking my son to football practice or taking my daughter to dance. That's where I get the best kicks. That's what I love.
That's when you're Daddy Tommy.
That's Dad Tommy.
And home is Belfast.
Home is Belfast.
There's a great buzz up there at the minute.
We love it. Again, a bit like you mentioned earlier, my parents being blow-ins to Monaghan. Monaghan treated us unbelievably well growing up. My wife is Welsh. I'm from Monaghan. There's absolutely no reason for us to really stay in Monaghan or in Belfast. But we enjoy it. It's a great city. It's got everything very much on your doorstep. And it's been good for us. And the kids seem to really enjoy it too.
I know a good few comedians living in Belfast, Northerners, and they tell me the Southerners are now taking over. Are you sensing it as well?
Yeah, they are.
Going to ruin the housing market up there.
It's wild, the amount of plates you see from all over the country. And it's brilliant. But exactly, I mean, this is one thing we discuss every day on the show is cost of housing, cost of living crisis. And it's frightening. I mean, for the house we have in Belfast, you're probably cost three times at least the price in Dublin. I mean, so yeah, I'm seeing so many people and talking to so many more people who have moved up north and are really enjoying it.
You're happy out. Tommy Bow, thanks a million. There's too many things to plug, but we've heard them all now. Just go,
Oliver,
follow Tommy.
You're an absolute legend. And honestly, I love your Callan's kicks. You're a top man. Thank you.
Thanks a million. Stop now. Good luck. Back up.
Email Oliver at rte.ie.